You know, everybody's got a to-do list. Drop off the dry cleaning, pick up some milk. Here's an idea. Let's save hundreds of dollars on car insurance. And the good thing is, you don't have to drop off or pick up anything. All you have to do is go to geico.com, and in 15 minutes, you could be saving 15% or more on car insurance. Extra money in your pocket, it just may be the most rewarding to-do you do today.
Now, Podcast One brings you Spike's Car Radio. A downloadable Cars and Coffee, hosted by writer, comedian, and automotive enthusiast, Spike Ferriston. Now, here's Spike.
Welcome, everybody, to Spike's Car Radio. It's nice to have you here. We're here in the Beverly Hills studio with an old friend, funny comedian. His name's Jeff Cesario. Jeff, how are you, man? It's been a long time.
Good. It's been too long.
Now, you're here because you have a new podcast on Podcast One, right?
I have a podcast.
You're one of the blessed 200.
Wow, is that what they're calling them?
not a dot more than 200 podcasts.
That's it.
That's it. If you're not holding up your listenership, they get rid of you and they bring in someone else.
We push you out the bottom.
they do the TV show, the blank TV show after show, and they get rid of your show. What is the new podcast
called?
It's called
Play With Pain. It features my sportscaster alter ego, Chet Waterhouse, who is sort of a very enthusiastic but daft sportscaster,
mm-hmm.
who loves sports, who calls whose own faux pas have kept him out of the majors, but he calls everything as if it's the seventh game of the World Series. So it's welcome to international speed fishing.
I remember this because you did a lot of this when you were on my show.
Right.
Way back in the day. This was like the writer's room comedy bit that you were always doing in the writer's room.
Brought to you by Incognito. You'd never guess we're plumbers. He has the worst endorsements and the most horrible analogies. Oh, that kid's harder to catch than a glimpse of your neighbor's wife naked. Can I say that? I can't say that. So it's a lot of that. And then he interviews a guest and Chet does an update.
Well, that's a lot of work. I mean, first of all, I remember – so this is back when I was hosting a late-night show on Fox. Spike Ferriston, right?
Yes.
2006 to 2009.
Tremendous show.
Show. Lots of great writers in that writer's room. I've gone off to run Colbert,
Small,
Bill Maher.
Small
staff. I know how to pick them.
But yeah,
Brooklyn
you do.
Brooklyn Nine-Nine. Maddie's on Brooklyn Nine-Nine.
Conan. Head writer on Conan.
Who's head writer in Conan?
Matty O'Brien.
He's now at Brooklyn Nine-Nine, I think, right?
I think they just canceled that.
He's back. They canceled it at Fox, but it's going to NBC.
Oh, so he went – wow.
So maybe – I don't know. Oh, I saw one of their writers yesterday, and he was shaken but excited. It was canceled, and then my job was saved.
So was his mortgage broker.
Yeah.
Shaken but excited.
Boy, that is show business. That is show business.
But that's a great old phrase. You can make a killing in showbiz, but it's hard to make a living. And this is why.
And it can kill you.
Yeah.
As well. I remember you doing this character in the writer's room. And here's what I remember is I kept telling myself, how are you riffing like that? You were like Eminem. You know when Eminem is freestyling? You were freestyling comedy and it was so good. And I would say to Gibby, I would say to the EP, I was like, is he writing these things and coming in and doing them? Or is that just flowing naturally?
Yeah. Speaking of freestyling, Michael Phelps warming up with 100 freestyle. 34 years old. I just saw him blow a dube. I do not have great expectations for this race.
So you're an accomplished stand-up comedian, world
Thank
famous.
You.
How do you, though, how famous, do you get from there to this Chet Waterhouse? How do you take this impression you're doing in the writer's room and go, let's turn it into a show?
You know, I always loved sportscasting when I was a kid. I just love the enthusiasm they would work up. And this is a God's honest true story. When I was a kid, I grew up in Wisconsin. I was a huge University of Wisconsin fan, football fan. And they were horrible. But the sportscaster then was a guy named Earl Gillespie. And he would make them sound so good and exciting that I wound up going to college. I mean, there's the kickoff from Illinois. Billy Merrick under it for the Badgers at the 5. He's churning, spinning, driving to the 6. Earl, I'm pretty sure Billy Merrick fell down, but he made it sound so exciting.
Yeah, the way they talk, even newscasters, they have that weird way of talking. And when someone gets in front of the camera or the microphone, doesn't do that, you go, "What's wrong with him?"
Yeah.
But it is so strange. Why do they have to talk like that?
I don't know. Something got in the. You know how
Howard Cosell
He sort of broke the mold a little bit because he didn't talk like that. He kind of had
but
more erudite.
That way of...
He did have the rhythm. There, right there. You saw it. I like when he accused you of seeing it. You saw it. A clear fumble. You know, you go, I don't, all right,
but nobody
I saw
talks
it.
Like that. Nobody talks like that in real life.
But there's something compelling, especially on radio or podcasting, when you hear a voice that drives you. There was an old jazz guy out of Rochester, New York, WHAM, Harry Abraham. And he when I was a kid listening to that at night, it just grabbed me. And that's a whole other school. That's the whole, that was Miles Davis. And prior to that was, it was Tuesday and it was Sonny Rollins. I mean, you know,
that's like Carl Castle on NPR.
That's
I'm
right.
Carl Castle whispering to you. Stop whispering to me. Just talk to me.
So that rhythm got in my blood. And then I thought I didn't really want to be a full-blown sportscaster. I tried sports writing for a while and I just thought, you just feel like such a third person. It's like, why not get in there and do something instead of
being
the person talking to the person doing something. So comedy, I had a little more affinity for that, so I did that. But then I kind of let this character grow, and I always did it in rooms and had a blast doing it. And people seemed to really like it. And finally, I put him in my act. He's been in my act for a while. So
what did you do? Did you bring it to Corolla? Did this come in through Corolla
or
right to Norm?
I've been doing them on radio for probably the better part of 25 years. I started on K-Rock in the early 90s. I was the sports guy before Jimmy Kimmel on K-Rock when Kevin and Bean had the show. So I did it for about a year and a half, 2 years. And then fast forward to about a year ago, I knew David Wilde, the great music writer, who was doing Corolla every two, three, 4 weeks or whatever, just popping on. And I said, David, I'd love to go and just hang out. And he said, okay, come with me. And then I said I had this wacky sportscaster that I thought he might like. And Mike August heard it and said, well, you know, yeah, all right, pop on. And I did it. I did an update. I always prepare a two-minute update. I even have one for you if you need it. but you know, because just that's who Chet is. He's always got 2 minutes of sports
updates ready. Let's hear some sports updates.
So then I did it for Corolla, and he literally looked at me and he goes, are you you're Chet Waterhouse from K-Rock? You? And I go, yeah, me. And he goes, get out. I never knew it was you. And so he kind of took a shine to that. And about every couple of weeks I popped on. And then in January, Norm said, why don't we give you a show, see what happens. And I'd like to even use you as the voice of Podcast One Sports.
Oh, that's cool.
I said, I'd love to do
that.
That's
a great idea.
I'll do any and all promos. I'll screw them up because that's what Chet does.
Yeah.
Hello again, everybody. Chet Waterhouse with a Waterhouse Weekend brought to you by UDrive, the app that lets you rent your own car to take you wherever you want to go. Playoff mania, NBA, Celtic slow-roasted Cleveland like a Chevy Malibu caught in a lava flow. LeBron James looks as exhausted as an African-American student trying to catch a nap at Yale. Now unemployed Kevin James said he's available to fall on someone's anterior cruciate ligament. That's good news for the Cavs. If Boston coach Brad Stevens can stay in the news two more days, he'll be tapped for a Trump cabinet post. Meanwhile, Houston and Golden State are playing for the NBA championship. James Harden sidelined when his beard erupted with molten lava and noxious gases. Hockey! Washington Capitals up 2-0 with new goalie Sarah Huckabee Sanders. Someone stop the Winnipeg Jets, said the NBC exec in charge of hockey ratings. That playoff menu brought to you by the Hot Dog Ingredients Defense Council. You're cooking them at 500 degrees. What do you care what the hell's in them? Baseball, Angels multi-threat show, hey Ohtani threw six scoreless innings, then caught a bluefin tuna with his bare hands for kicks. Golf, at the Players' Championship, Webb Simpson coasted to victory literally while shooting a 73 from a hoverboard. UFC 224, Amanda Nunes retains her belt with a knee to the nose. A martial arts move straight from the Netherlands. That pun brought to you by Plopcorn, the popcorn that pops upside down. Get it right in the bowl with Plopcorn. If you want more of me this weekend, Spike, I'll be in Lake of the Weeds, Minnesota, doing play-by-play on Fishing for Pickups, where fishermen try to catch their own trucks they drunkenly left on the ice too long in March. This is Chet Waterhouse reminding you to play with pain.
Yes. Unbelievable. Do you want us to put some like rah-rah marching band music under that report,
or is it meant to be? It doesn't need it. You can do it anyway.
I think it's low enough. How are you going to do that for a straight hour?
I do a half hour. I do interviews.
That's a lot of energy you just put out.
It is.
It made me tired just listening to it. It's densely written. It's lovely. It's funny. But that's – what was that? 40 seconds?
Maybe that was 2 minutes.
That was about two minutes. Okay. Yeah. That leaves you 28 minutes.
Well, that's why I have a guest. And then I do a legitimate interview, except all the questions come out like, so what's the new project? You know. So then I let the person talk. Well, that sounds idiotically funny coming out of a sportscaster like
that. But it's hard. I mean, people don't realize how hard. You know, Stephen Colbert is one of the few that was able to pull it off with the Colbert Report, right? And this is at a very high energy, high speed.
Well, that's why I thought a half hour is enough, you know. And I do about an hour and a half prep on the guest. And I see what they're up to. I try to find a couple of facts on them. I do about 15 minutes of straight interview. Then I do something called the Fiery Four, which is a ripoff of all those Blazing Fives and all those ripped from today's headlines. So hot, they got an under-the-table payment from Michael Cohen. You know, just stuff like that. And then I ask the guest to do a pop quiz for me. Anywhere from 3 to 5 questions on anything, pop culture, sports, anything they want, movies, whatever they want. And Chet usually screws that up. I actually try to use my own real mind.
Right.
It just comes out, but I don't know that much. So I usually lose the pop quiz, which is riotously funny. And then I pepper the whole thing with, you know, that remark brought to you by Throwbacks, the e-cigarette you light with a match. You know, just dumb.
Wow.
Dumb stuff like that.
Nah, this is wild.
I have fun.
Is the perfect format for you. I like this because that guy you want – I found myself trying to listen for the real news in there. Was there real news in there?
There is real news in there.
There's real sports news in there.
Yeah, that,
I like that.
I forgot to update the fact that the Caps are only up 2-1 now. Tampa Bay Lightning won last night. So
are you just a 24/7 sports junkie?
You know, I'm not. I keep up on it. I got a 9-year-old daughter, which takes a big chunk out of the day's schedule. you know, man, oh man, I'm exhausted. But I try to keep up on it. Even the sports I don't like that much, just because it's kind of fun. And now, especially with Chet, it's good to be aware of things that are going on and to try to at least stay up to date on trades or who's doing what. But you know, I also try to comment on the idiocy of it all, like, you know, fantasy football is, hey, what's that sound? That's the South Koreans flying by us at the speed of light while we waste our time on fantasy football. So I try to throw a little bit of that in there.
Do you play any of that stuff? I can't get my head around. I still don't even know how it works.
No, I don't either, and it seems like a massive time
I'll tell suck. You what has been getting me back into sports, because I, you know, when you're young, you're very much into sports. But then I went to college and I went to music school. You know a lot about what I did. And then I'm into comedy. It's just, there's no room for sports. There's no room for talking about it. I preferred to play it rather than talk about it.
And what'd you play?
I played baseball. I was a very good baseball player.
What'd you play?
I drafted varsity when I was in 9th grade. I played center field. I was an outfielder. And then I played when I was younger, I would play shortstop or second base.
Ferriston under it. He basket catches it just for the crowd.
I still have great eyes. I can, you know, I wear glasses, but I still have 2010, 2015 vision with them. So
you can break on the ball.
So I can break on the ball.
That's the skill to an outfielder.
They called me Eagle Eye.
Wow.
Yeah, I remember the day I was playing for the Pirates in Little League. They said, "You're Eagle Eye.
Wow.
You can see those things."
That's
and
great.
I loved it. And I modeled myself after Freddie Lynn.
Sure.
So I would even hold back a little so I could make the diving catch.
Like the famous
Red Sox Freddie Lynn.
But you knew you were holding back.
I knew I was holding back.
And you knew you could still make it.
A little bit of showmanship. There's a little bit of showbiz coming out right back there.
But there really is. I mean, the best players had that. I mean,
and then, you know, in Boston, things did not go well when, you know, in the 70s and 80s for Boston.
No,
the Celtics were okay, but the Patriots and the Red Sox.
Yeah, Celtics were legitimate dynasty.
They were, but the Red Sox
were heartbreakers.
Heartbreakers.
Yeah.
Heartbreakers. Whenever we got close, and my father was very superstitious, and he believed, well, this is deserved. The people of New England deserve to live like we've done something wrong. He didn't believe in the Babe Ruth, the curse of Babe Ruth, but he believed in everything else.
Something deeper than that.
Deeper, like you're watching the game.
That was just a trick.
And I would say, hey, hey, they're going to win this one. And he'd go, don't say that. Don't say that, Michael.
Yeah.
And then they would lose. He'd go, see,
you did it.
You did that. So, you know, I had to unwind
you
a lot of
– You upset the karma apple cart.
A lot of that bad psychology. Now, they go on, and the Patriots go on, to win a lot.
Yeah.
And I was actually with my dad the first time the Patriots won the Super Bowl.
That
and
had to be exciting.
This weight just lifts from you. Like, God, the curse isn't real. The curse isn't real. And the Reds, same things happen. The Red Sox win. Now it happens a few times, right? And now you get a little complacent, a little ambivalent. You're just like, all right, well, that's what we do here in Boston. We win. New England. That's right. We win. We've got a sports dynasty here. And then, you know, as you get older, time is flying by very, very, very quickly. And now it's like, oh, wait, they're playing again? Oh, who cares? I'll start paying attention during the playoffs.
And
maybe now I'm going to start paying attention during just for the Super Bowl.
That's
are they
interesting.
In it or are they out of it? You know what I'm saying?
As a Wisconsin fan, growing up, the Packers were a dynasty when I was a kid, but they were a hard-earned dynasty that had come from ashes, rebuilt themselves under Lombardi. Wisconsin was horrible. The Braves moved to Atlanta when I was a kid, so I had nothing. So that lightheartedness leaves me much more reluctantly. I still root just about every game of Wisconsin football. And even this year's team has a great – they have a great lunch bucket mentality there that still exists. It's very Rust Belt. Mm-hmm. They wear T-shirts under their shirts now that say, nobody cares, work harder, which is a great way to undercut all the hype you get, you know. And I got to get me one of those T-shirts just for life.
Well, people, you start to – you know, I bartended in Boston to put myself through school, and I'd meet these old guys who were, you know, not lying. I'm staying alive. I don't know why they're drinking at the bar, but I'm staying alive until the Red Sox win. It was primarily the Red Sox. And now, you know, I've watched my mom and I remember my grandmother. They turn – all the women of New England after the age of about 55 turn into hardcore Red Sox fans. Like they know more about the game. Like, you know, she never came to any of my Little League games. She couldn't tell you how the game was played. And then she called me. She goes, I'm at Fenway Park. And I'm like, why? It's not even baseball season yet. And he goes, well, there's a big day of celebration here for Louis Tiant. And I'm like, really?
Oh, that's great.
You're going to that? Yes. And then they're going to honor Ted Williams. And I go, are the stands filled? She goes, no, it's just the hardcore fans.
Oh, that's great.
And I can't explain it. But now, so now you get grandma, right? And that gets my attention, but doesn't get me back into watching the games. But
interesting
now,
demographic.
But now I've got these two boys.
Oh,
I've got Jack and James.
And your kids are like 11 and 9 maybe?
10 and 8. Jack is playing baseball, playing on the Angels. You know, he was the worst athlete I've ever seen. He was far worse than any Ferriston that's ever been made. And then at 10, he starts to get it together.
In.
Yeah. James, he's always had it, but he's into soccer. I'm not sure what that is just yet. But now I listen to them talk to their grandma and baseball, and then I'm sucked in.
Oh,
and
that's
now I'm
great.
Like a little jealous that they're calling grandma about the Red Sox because they're both Red Sox Patriots fans.
Sure.
And the LA fans. So the
now,
Dodgers
why is
too.
That? That's a dyed-in-the-wool thing that I think you should take ownership of and, quite frankly, credit for, which is they're in LA.
Right.
There's now two teams here for football, and there's two baseball teams, essentially.
Right.
There's two basketball teams.
Right.
And yet. Red Sox.
Well, here's
Patriots.
Well, Red Sox and Dodgers are very big in our house. But Jack came home from the hospital on the day the Patriots lost the Super Bowl to the Giants in Arizona. Right?
Was that the Dave Tyree helmet catch one? Or was
I'll take your word for it. It was yes. But I have a picture of him, which I showed him for many years. This is you the day you came home in front of the big screen. Unfortunately, the Patriots lost right after that.
So
I'm not going to say you're the curse. You're the reason why they lost. Like my dad.
But there's
did
a
you.
Little of your dad in there.
But I was thinking about
just
it.
Planting that in your own kid.
Yes, sir. So now 7 years later,
the Schadenfreude lives on.
7 years later, Patriots are in the Super Bowl. And they're playing at the same stadium in Arizona. And I'm working for NBC for Car Matchmaker. And I say, hey, you know, it's my son's birthday. He's 7. And here, look at this picture. This is 7 years ago. Do you think? And they say, we're gonna set you up.
Wow.
So great. The NBC Sports sets me up. They get us on a plane. They fly us together. They put us up. They give us, you know, $30,000 worth of Super Bowl tickets.
Wow.
We sit next to Ian Ziering
from
Sharknado.
Yeah.
And I've got 7-year-old Jack there. It's his first football game. And you remember the game?
Wow.
It was a nail-biter right through to the end. But
who'd they play?
But the Patriots won. Jeez, I don't even remember who they played.
Wow.
I don't remember the other team. No, I do. You know, because Joel McHale was there. It was the Seahawks.
Oh, yeah,
it was
yeah.
the Seahawks.
Okay.
Yeah. And he was not very happy about that.
Oh,
last
was
word
that
you,
the
Joel.
Interception? No,
yeah.
That was only 3-4 years ago. I can't remember. That's the one where...
But
the
just
Patriots
imagine
picked it off on a goal line.
Just imagine little Jack, okay?
Oh boy.
Little Jack has a birthday party. I get R2-D2
oh, no,
to come
it was.
And
that
then
was
we
the game.
Literally get on a plane and we fly to the Super Bowl where we
wow.
watch this team win the Super Bowl. It's his first
yep.
game. He now this is what that moment did to him. Every day of the week that he goes to school, every day, 5 days a week, he wears a Patriots shirt.
Oh, that's great. That's
it doesn't
great.
Matter if it's football season or not.
Does he have anybody on the jersey? Does he care? Any name on the back?
Of course. Look, he sees 87s everywhere.
Oh,
87s.
So it's Gronk, yeah.
It's Gronk. Dad, look, it's 87. Hey, Dad, look, the 8 is next to the 7 on the clock face, like Gronk. It's insanity.
That's great.
And Brady second.
Well, yeah, there's a second level to Gronk for kids because not only is he a great football player, but he clearly still thinks farts are the greatest
yes.
laugh in the world, you know?
He's kind of Muppety. He's
yeah,
kind
right.
of Muppety.
Right, right, exactly. That was the Super Bowl
yes.
where the Seahawks were driving. And tried a pass from the 1 yard line
mm-hmm.
instead of jamming Marshawn Lynch into the line. And Malcolm Butler,
that's right.
in one of the most amazing plays. I played flag football. That's as far as I got.
Right.
But I was a D back. I have the mentality of a D back.
Mm-hmm.
And he made the greatest play I think I've ever seen a D back make, which is somehow on a complete short 2 yard anticipation route, he out anticipated the receiver and picked it off the goal line.
Yeah.
Amazing play.
And so the
and then benched in this year's Super Bowl.
Yes.
Yeah. I don't know what
notably,
that was about.
Notably. None of us do. And they lost.
Some sort of locker room snafu, Spike. You can't get around Belichick that way.
What do you think,
that's
Chet?
A Lombardi era thing. Trying to sneak in after a 3-martini lunch. Not going to work.
You know, Marshawn Lynch did say that he would win, Chet. He said he would have won the game if he were in. Do you believe that?
I do. I do.
No, I want to do it as Chet Waterhouse.
I firmly believe they would have won because that's a dive play. Marshawn Lynch has the skills to leap to do the old Larry Canada right over the top. Denver Broncos back in the mid-80s, I tell you. And I like that kid they had at QB, Russell Wilson. Spent 1 year at Wisconsin. Gotta love that. Always looking for the Badger barometer. Everything measured against the Badger barometer.
So that's why he's a Patriots fan. There's no way yeah. in hell I'm getting him off that.
And, No. You can't.
You can't. It's impossible.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, and we're going to go visit Fenway this summer, but you know, you have to have a hometown team as well, right? Don't you
I believe
think that?
So.
Like
yeah.
the Dodgers are great. It's a great time.
Yeah, I would never give up the Packers in a million years, even through the Scott Hunter, Don Mikowski years at quarterback.
What do you think, Chet? What do you think about the new baseball net surrounding the stadiums to keep people safe? Do you think that's a good idea, or does it ruin the game for you?
Lowers lawsuits, increases eye problems. Did you ever try to stare through mesh at anything? I've been to some rough strip clubs, and it kind of gave me double vision there. My goodness, that portion of the broadcast brought to you by Bananas, the banana guaranteed to ripen tomorrow. So it's just stuff like that.
I love that. That's great.
Like that.
The strip joint. Mesh in a strip joint. That's perfect. You know, by the way, the mesh that goes around the field is only for the good seats.
Oh, really?
Yeah, which they deserve, right? They totally deserve that. I happen to be sitting in the good seats, but I was like, I deserve this.
The Trump Rockefeller mesh
yeah.
is what it is.
Yeah, it's old... like...
Nobody with money is going to get hit. Don't worry,
no,
folks.
But I was at a game last season where I almost was hit
wow.
in those very same seats. They're not my seats. I was a guest. But I just turned for 1 second with my
tiny.
Friend to look at the board like that. And the fella next to us said... oh boy, but just like that, oh boy, and we went, what? And the ball went
wow.
right over the top of my hair like that. And I said, that is not an oh boy moment. That's a look out moment.
It's that's a look. That's get your mitt up there and stop
yes,
it moment.
Yes, it was comedian Chuck Martin. You know Chuck?
Yeah.
Okay.
Well,
goes,
now
oh
it makes sense.
He goes, oh, boy.
That's as excited as Chuck's
been. No, that's, oh, shit, Chuck. Oh, shit, look out. You're going to get killed.
I'll give Chuck the presence of mind to have computed the fact that he's a Dodger fan and probably thought, wow, that's a Red Sox fan next to me, so let's see what happens.
Yeah, it doesn't matter. Anyway, all right, we'll be back to talk more with Chet Waterhouse, a.k.a. Jeff Cesario, right after this. If you're looking to buy a car, you're probably familiar with terms like MSRP. You might even know what it stands for. But what does it actually mean? The same goes for invoice, list price, and dealer price. It's enough to confuse anybody. All you're really looking for is a price that actually means something. Introducing True Price from True Car. Now you can know exactly what you'll pay for the car you want, including fees and accessories, before you even get to the dealership. True Car dealers will show you the true price on cars like the one you want, all from the comfort of your home. And how do you know if your True Price is a great price? Because True Car shows you what other people paid for the same car you want. And your certified dealers know this, so they set their true price competitively so they can win your business. So when you're ready to buy a new or used car, visit True Car to enjoy a more confident car buying experience. Some features not available in all states. I'm talking about you.
You're listening to Spike's Car Radio.
We're back here with Jeff Cesario, who's trying to convince me he's a car guy. I don't see it. Go ahead. Give me your
well,
car guy
I'm
pitch.
I'm not an engine guy.
That's okay.
But I'm a car guy.
If you're enthusiastic about automobiles, you're welcome here in this room.
I grew up in Kenosha, Wisconsin, America's only other auto town. In Kenosha, Wisconsin was the main plant for American Motors, builders of the Pacer, the Gremlin, the Javelin, and a couple of halfway decent cars. The Mark Donahue AMX, which at the time was the fastest American road car out there. The Typhoon, a couple of other great cars they built. So most of the guys I went to high school with worked at the plant.
Wow. So did you see these cars on the road growing up?
Oh, God. Everywhere. Especially in the 60s and 70s, buy American, because that was the Japanese invasion. We can't buy Japanese small cars. So American Motors
built
the Gremlin
that.
And
sure.
all. And so they were everybody in Kenosha. I mean, 20% of the workforce in Kenosha worked at American Motors.
Wow, that's cool.
So it
that's
was
a great thing to have on your resume.
Yeah, it's a big factory town. A big American Motors town. So guys would just get them off the line and rip off the catalytic converter and just take out all the anti-pollution crap and just slam in some, you know, hooker headers and a Hearst pistol shift and go to town. So
still 0-60 in 15 seconds.
Slam some Edelbrock cars on it. But, you know, when you got a Gremlin with a 258 V6 in it and nothing else on it, that can haul off the line a
I'm
little
gonna
bit
tell you,
at a red light. So.
I am in a mood lately that I would buy a Pacer. I would buy a Gremlin.
Yeah.
I saw a perfect Ford Pinto the other day somewhere, and I thought, I want that, even though it might explode.
Yeah,
I want
the ugly car museum. I tell you, the Javelin was the best looking car they ever built. The Javelin was a good looking car.
I'm not so sure about that. To me, it's about the smells. I mean, I don't remember anything in my neighborhood in Massachusetts that we were driving around where I thought, this is a beautiful car. Well, I just remember the good times and the smells inside the car, right?
Yeah,
that
yeah.
goofy American car smell.
So
and
there
the
were
bad
a
handling.
Lot of true motorheads in Kenosha. And I mean, you know, there were guys with muscle cars left and right. The Pontiac Goat, and we had the Ford Torinos and, you know, old 442s and all of those level muscle cars. And I loved looking at those things coming down the street. I loved the smell of octane.
Right.
You know, I loved that. And I still do. I'd still like to get to a place where I could get a great classic car, keep it in great shape, and have a garage for it. And if I can knock off a couple more projects, maybe I can get there.
Yeah, all you have to do is move out of L.A., which
is now that's true.
The most expensive city in the world, next to New York and Dubai and London.
And finally, an article convinced my wife of that, because we were thinking, you know, you're in that murky area now.
Yeah.
We're like, what are we going to do in 5 years? And she looked at me and she said, did you know that we live in an area of the country that's real estate prices are 99% and above? And I said, yes.
Yeah, yeah, I did
know
notice that.
Because I've been paying the mortgage for 20
yes,
freaking years.
Yes, I saw that. But if you get out now before the whole thing collapses. Now it's all floating on Russian and Chinese money, Russian and Chinese money.
That's right.
They're just coming in. We don't even know who lives in the houses. You never see anybody there. And the prices just keep going up for a house. A house.
Well, why does that look like a Franco-Prussian turret? That doesn't matter. Just let them build it.
Let's
I love talking about cars.
We love hearing you talk about cars. I want to talk about have you seen Dennis Miller at all? You and I share so much showbiz history. You know, I wrote for Dennis back in the day for Weekend Update.
Oh, that's right. Yes.
Way back in the day. By the way, I didn't write for him. I was the receptionist. I handed him jokes.
You were slipping him jokes, sure.
Yeah, slipping him jokes.
Because nobody at Saturday Night Live could write for Update because they were so busy saving their own ass and writing sketches, and it was such a Chinese fire drill.
Yeah.
I had the privilege from knowing Denny of going up there a couple of times and seeing that world in action.
You were writing jokes too?
Update? Well, I knew Denny from stand-up. So what I would do is I was on the road 7-8 months a year at the time. This is mid-'80s. So I'd do something. And I knew nobody was writing for him, and I knew it was his first year on the gig, and you know, his ass is on the line. So I'd do something. If it worked, I'd go, Denny, this is so topical. It's freaking dead in a week.
Right.
Use it. I don't need another 30 seconds. It worked. Do it. I'd be honored. And so he wound up using a couple, two, three, four, maybe a half dozen things over the course of a year or so. Then he got more entrenched, and he had guys like you and other guys feeding him stuff. But still, deep into his run there, nobody officially on staff could write for him because they were too busy writing other stuff. And after I saw that world, I literally said to myself, Spike, I said, I have the opportunity to probably get in here or have a shot to get in here.
Right.
I'm not going to pursue it because I don't have the metal. I don't have the guile to survive this. I don't know how to do this.
The joke writing would have been easy for you because Herb Sargent was kind of the gatekeeper for all the content, and the jokes were getting written, Wednesday, but mostly Thursday, Friday, and even Saturday point. And what I recall about it, because I was sitting there at Ground Zero answering the phones, the receptionist was, that it wasn't that people didn't have time. It just wasn't the hippest job back then. Weekend Update wasn't what Weekend Update had been with Chevy Chase.
Right.
And it isn't what it is now.
Well, it wasn't conceptual because Denny's strength was, I'm hitting you with three Muhammad Ali jabs and then a left hook. Down.
Yeah. And it was very smart for the time. But it was still set up and punchline, which wasn't cool to the. For me, it was just like, well, if no one's going to write this, I'll start here.
Yeah.
That's where I can start because there's an opening.
That's great.
But, that's
interesting to hear. Yeah.
So much fun and just nothing else to do,
And he's a great. Denny, out of all the people, was one of the few, very few people in showbiz. Him and Gary, that might be about it, Gary Shanley, who said, just write the joke. I'll turn it into a Dennis Miller joke. Don't worry about thinking in my head or anything like that. Just write a good freaking joke.
Right.
And believe me, just with my voice, it'll sound Dennis Miller. He said, don't worry about that.
I remember submitting a joke about Edwin Meese. Remember that guy? I hate these Meeses to pieces. Some version of that. I got it, Spike. I'll take it from here.
Yeah, right.
These Meeses to pieces.
Don't worry about it, Spike. I got it, bud. I can handle it from here.
It was so much fun.
Through the 63-yard bomb, I got the last 7 yards.
Enough of that kabuki shit, Twyla. It's any of these guys that we wrote for to get stuck in your head.
It's
amazing. It's like, and I'm stuck because the last big guy I wrote for was Seinfeld. So I'm stuck in a Seinfeld rhythm for the rest of my life. But I had a Dave in my head.
Sure.
I had a Dennis in my head at one point.
The great thing, I listened to Stern a lot. And Gilbert Gottfried would go on there, and they would start in a semi-mocky tone, get into a Seinfeld rhythm. Usually, what if Seinfeld were blue? It was kind of the hook they would fall into. And then they'd be swearing and stuff in Seinfeld. And I guarantee you, within 2 minutes, they were writing fairly solid jokes. Because you get into that head, you get into that rhythm, and you can't help it. You start to think in those premises, and pretty soon, good jokes are coming out.
Yeah, or you attribute them. to him because I used to do it.
That's a tremendously
Mine is
powerful.
Really an extreme, Jerry, right now. Now I go, what's the deal with half great. And half, Spike? And I'll say that to him. And he goes, you know, I never said that. And I go, yeah, you did. He goes, I never said anything about half and half, Spike. Yes, you did, Jerry.
This is my favorite Seinfeld story. I was writing jokes early in my career. Not only for myself, but I started in Minneapolis. So I would write for other guys because I just love to write. You know mm-hmm. how that feels. And Louis Anderson was coming up with me. And I should say I was coming up with him. He started earlier than I did. And you know, Louis's fantastic. And he's amazing off the top of his head. He's a brilliant comic. But I would write some fat jokes for him. And I remember I wrote a joke, when I go camping, the bears put their food in the trees. So, which is a pretty solid joke. And so I told Seinfeld this. And he says, what are you doing giving away jokes? And I go, well, it's a fat joke. What am I supposed to do? And Jerry goes, two words, fat cousin.
Yes. Don't
went,
wait.
Boy, he's right.
Oh, my God.
He's
you
right.
guys are all the same. No, you're very generous, though. You're right. But he just locks that down on a yellow pad and puts it in his
that's
little
it.
File cabinet. It will come out someday.
Yes.
And that's why he's got billions of dollars, Spike. Now, you wrote on Larry Sanders, too?
I did.
Did I not know
Larry
that?
I came out of Dennis Miller Live. I did three seasons on that. We won two Emmys the first two seasons. And then
Is everybody asking you what they asked me? Have you seen The Shandling Doc by
I
Judd
have
Apatow?
Seen The Shandling Doc.
Every step I take out in the world, someone yeah. comes up to me and asks
right.
me that. And I was going to watch it. And now I don't want to watch it because too many people asked me. But you saw it.
I did. Judd, you know, Judd had a very special relationship with
Judd
Gary.
Apatow.
Yeah, Judd Apatow. And you know, so Judd's
and he got the memoirs, right? Or he got the diary.
He did. He got the diaries, and he uses those as a storytelling tool throughout the documentary. And it's a very entertaining documentary, especially, I believe, if you didn't know much about Gary or knew mm-hmm. him as a stand-up and knew he had a couple of shows and I might have caught a couple of episodes. If you go in from that standpoint, I think it's wildly entertaining.
Mm-hmm.
If you knew Gary, it's a great ride through his career.
Yeah. No. Well,
it's fun. And you know, Gary was a special guy.
Yeah.
Just a special, interesting, phenomenally flawed, yet giving and spiritual human being. He was one of the few guys I could think of in show business who wasn't just a stand-up and a mentor,
mm-hmm.
but was a guy. In fact, speaking of cars, I finally had made enough money, and I knew Gary, to buy a new truck, and I wanted to get a truck. I wanted to get a Toyota 4Runner. And I said, Gary, and he had a 4Runner, and I said, you know, I'd like to get a 4Runner, but I just don't know anything about going to buy a car, and I'm going to buy it with payments just because I got to establish credit if I ever want to buy a house. And he said, I'll go with you. I love that. And he went with me like a big brother. It was incredible. And he loved all that stuff. And he'd go,
did he
really? You're going to charge that for undercoating? That's a sin. You know, he would like go right down
That's
the line.
Great.
It was incredible to watch. It was one of the sweetest, most beautiful things anybody's ever done for me.
The Shandling deal. So
yeah.
Did the salesman know him?
They did. And he used that to every advantage to crank that price down.
Really?
He got me an unbelievable deal.
Did you really get the undercoating? Because you never get the undercoating.
No, we Good. Didn't get the undercoating.
Yeah, you didn't.
No, no.
That
said,
is fantastic.
You can't charge him for that. That's ridiculous. You should just throw that in. If
wow.
you're going to do it, just throw it in. Now watch this here with the tinted windows.
That's
Why?
Tremendous.
So he,
what
and
a
he
guy.
Just busted their balls.
Yeah. What a sweetheart to do that, though.
Yeah, and I, like I say, I don't have that kind of guile. People look at me. If you look at me, you go, New York comic.
I wouldn't take advantage of you. That's not what I see.
But you know, when you talk to me for 5 minutes, you go, oh, this kid's obviously from the Midwest.
Right, you know? Right.
So, and he knew that, and I learned from watching him do that. I'm a learner. You know, but I have to learn those muscles.
I had no idea he could negotiate deals.
Oh, he was great.
He's like a comic true car.
That's right. Yeah,
did he collect cars? Did he have cars?
Not.
I thought I remember him having a Porsche.
He did have a Porsche. He wasn't like nutty for it. He
right.
had three cars. He had enough to fill his garage. That's
yeah.
about it.
Yeah.
But he hung on to his old 4Runner forever because he just loved that car. He loved to take his dogs, Shep and Maggie, out in the car and just go down to the beach, and he
mm-hmm.
loved that part of his life. Or go up to – he had a cabin up in Big Bear, I think, somewhere up there, or Mammoth or something.
I just framed a picture of him and I out in the porch in Malibu that Bill, who runs the Malibu Kitchen, took.
Oh, really?
Yeah, we were chatting a few months before he died on the porch, and then Bill snapped this little picture with his phone and sent me a copy of it. And I got it in the mail. It's tremendous. Tremendous little picture. I didn't know Gary that well, but it was nice to have that little memory with him before he passed away.
I remember I got to know him through Dennis.
Were you part of the basketball crew? Did you play ball?
I did play ball for a long time until my knees started to give out. And then I had a kid. And then at that point, you know, what are you going to do?
I would imagine everybody at that game's knee. Like, who else is there? Now can you talk about who went to the basketball games?
You know, I tell you.
Are you not allowed to talk about it?
You know, for me.
Because I remember Gary would kick you out of the basketball game if you talked about who was at the basketball game, right?
Yes. And I sort of inadvertently fell into that pit. I didn't know that was a rule.
And you said it?
Yes.
You're one of those?
I got.
Who did you out at the basketball game?
I happened to be on Stern, and they asked about it.
Okay.
And so I discussed the game a little bit.
Whose name did you give up?
I don't remember. I mean, you know, two or three or four, but mostly people who had done Stern before me,
right?
And talked about the game. So,
so they didn't want publicity for the game.
I didn't know there was a rule.
I know at some point I was in
guys from the game who had been on Stern.
But
and
now that
about
Gary,
game, so
now that Gary's passed, is so can't we now talk about the game?
Well, considering that 2 days after the game, there was a photo from Gary's basketball court with 80 people on it. You know,
where can the listeners find that?
Literally,
photo?
You know, it was literally like Donnie Most, I think, was out on the court. I had no idea who these people were.
So
but
you're
I still,
saying,
just out of respect for the speed bump that Gary's friendship and I had. I don't talk.
A picture. I know Kevin Nealon is probably one of those people, and
a manager,
agent or two of mine have been there. I was invited. I was always intimidated. I couldn't wrap my head around playing basketball with Gary Shandling. I just thought, well, I don't even understand the terms of this game. Am I supposed to try to do well? Do I even know how to play basketball?
It was just fun.
I was such a fan of his, and some of the other people that I heard were there. I just didn't understand how I could relax in that situation playing basketball.
Right.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, I do. But it was just a fun game and a very
I totally
giving,
regret the decision.
Very giving game.
Yeah.
And he was a very giving guy. So it mattered not.
This was another one. Now that you're jogging my memory, further back, someone said, do you want to play tennis with Johnny Carson? And I said,
wow.
Absolutely not.
Yeah, exactly.
Absolutely
no, that
not.
One
no.
I wouldn't have gone
I go,
for.
What do you mean? He goes, well, he likes to play tennis, so he needs people to play tennis with. Now, it was right after, you know, right or during or after I'm writing for Seinfeld. I didn't understand what was happening in the world with that show.
Right.
But apparently these doors were opening up all over the place for me, but I would slam them shut as quickly as possible.
I can understand that mindset, though, because it's terrifying.
Terrifying.
I mean, plus, that's an individual game. That's a one-on-one game. I can't think of a more treacherous environment.
Well, here's what
sports
they went back
to. With the possible exception of, would you like to water ski with Johnny Carson? He'll be in the boat. He'll be on the ski.
Yes.
I mean, I don't know
this
anything
is what
more
I imagine,
dangerous.
Right? I took tennis lessons growing up, but then, as I said, I segued into baseball, and that was the end of it. I never really learned how to serve properly,
so
I can do the dinky serve, right?
Yeah.
So I put myself – I'm a writer. I visualize the moment
and
me doing the dinky serve to Johnny Carson and him just throwing his racket down and walking off.
Spike, is that it? That's it?
That's what you're bringing me today, Spike?
All right, Spike, we're going to have to take a break. Ed, have you ever seen a tennis serve like that? All right, Ed's Blotto.
But how stupid am I for not going to at least get the story? And, you know, I bumped into Johnny a bunch of times because we would when we'd come out for the Emmys with Dave, he would show up to Granita out in Malibu and often would just buy the staff dinner for everyone. He was such an awesome guy.
Oh, that's great.
And, you know, I truly didn't appreciate him until later on in life. But,
I did the show with Johnny as a stand-up, which was one of the biggest thrills of my life.
Wow.
Did seven of them.
Wow. That's
great.
Insane. So tell us what happened on that first one.
Well, the first one, your nuts are in your throat, if I may say that, just because
your nuts are in your throat.
Oh, brother. Speaking of nuts in your throat, Louis Tiant looks at the sky, delivers outside corner. Colts strike three.
So you go.
But George Brett can't move the bat. Pine Tower, no. And he's out.
Is this what year is this?
Bo Sox lead, 8-0. This was 87. I'd done a couple of Lettermans, actually, for which I'm eternally grateful
before
to Dave. Yeah.
Okay.
For having seen something in me.
Which was more stressful, Dave or Johnny?
Both equally stressful, I would say, on different levels. Letterman, I distinctly remember walking a shallow U around Central Park South, then up about six blocks on the west on West Side, down across Central Park South, up about six blocks on Fifth, back down or for till about four in the morning.
Yeah.
Before the show, just because it was my first network show.
Wow,
and just freaking out. But everybody there was tremendously gracious. And then you know, at the time, the Tonight Show was the small end of the funnel. You know, and the big end of the funnel was as big as it is now. People wanted to get into comedy, stand up, whatever it was, improv, whatever. So people pouring in from all parts of the country into this giant end of the funnel. Now the bottom end of the funnel is more conical. There's mm-hmm. podcasts. There's a billion things you can do. There's sketch comedy, movies, all sorts of ways to let your comedy out there. Back then, that was it. The Tonight Show.
Yeah,
get
that's
to
it.
That
there's
little
no, right.
teeny end of the funnel. So to be able to do it and to have the talent coordinator at the time, the late, great Jim McCauley, knew you had to have five shots ready. If you had five shots ready, then you were ready for your first shot. So I got to that point. They gave me the first shot. My first joke worked, and I was able to relax. And, you know, Carson was a guy of such grace and class. And I remember Carl Reiner was the guest that first night. So there's
the
two guys out there with grace and class.
Yes.
And Carson goes, literally, you're here on a great night. This is a great night. You're in a great mood. We're in a great mood. We've got a good young comic here. And he just sets this table like you're at 21.
Yeah,
using the fine
yeah.
china and the good silverware. Just goes, you're going to love this next guy. And I come out, and the crowd's ready. So I remember my first joke at the time was, look at me. I know I look a little ethnic when I show up at a beach in California. People say, who called a cab? And that killed. And then I just relaxed into it, and the whole set went great.
Did you look over, a glance
no,
at Johnny to see if
never. Never.
I knew. So you didn't see it till you watched it, him chuckling.
No, that's the comedic version of getting a jump on the ball.
Right.
You don't mess around.
Did the
Nothing
laughs,
gets in that zone.
And you don't get to rehearse that moment either, right? So
no.
you're in that hermetically sealed environment. How did the laugh sound?
But you understand that was still back when when applause were earned.
Right.
Now there's much more of a guilt applause when a comic
yes.
gets a bit that gets a laugh. People feel
there's
they
a button.
Need to applaud.
There's a button in the control room
yeah.
they press, and it makes people
Back
react.
Then, you just earned everything. So I started to get big laughs that kind of went into applause breaks. But the timing was still there from the laugh, and I knew enough of that timing from clubs
wow.
That I could ride that laugh mm-hmm. into the next joke. I never got too comfortable. I always wanted to stay ahead of myself. But, you know, you learn that muscle of looking comfortable while your brain
does
is 10
Johnny,
seconds ahead.
Does he come and say hi to you before or after at any time?
He did
time?
Not. He just so said you- from when I – and believe me. I got a big response. I bowed. I didn't even fucking look over. I didn't want to take the chance.
Right,
I just spun around and went out, and I could hear him from backstage going, tremendous job. You're going to hear a lot from that kid. Something like that.
Wow.
And that's all I needed.
Right.
And then by the fourth or fifth one, I was doing panel. And
so you did. You came out
I did
to that
do
chair.
Panel, yeah,
wow,
yeah, yeah.
That's
yeah.
a big moment.
Well, you know, it was fantastic because you had panel material just prepped, and he would feed you the setup, but he'd like to go off the page, which a lot of guys didn't like, and I kind of watched it, and I realized, you know, people forget he's a stand-up, you know, and he just – it's like you and me and Seinfeld at a bar just shooting premises.
Yeah.
You know, he likes that. What comic doesn't?
Well,
you
I love –
and so it was that he liked. He liked throwing you something you weren't
exactly.
expecting, see if you could do something with the premise. He was spitballing. So I took that attitude, and I always had a great time with him on panel.
Comedians are the most relaxing people to interview because you don't have to do anything.
Yeah.
You can ask them anything. Hey, what's going on? I'll tell you what's going on. It's so great. And they'll
yeah.
just go and go and go, and it's a nice break in the middle of the show.
Yes,
as
absolutely.
Opposed to the actress.
Yes.
And
well,
some
yeah.
actors, but mostly the actress who comes on and tells you the coffee bean story
oh my
from
God.
This morning.
Well, that was
and
the strength of the initial episodes of your own show, if I may divert for just a second, which was you know, when I look at some of the film pieces you did, you know, the what was the Nanny? Nanny Spike.
Nanny 911.
Nanny
yeah.
911.
Nanny Spike.
Spike.
Yep.
And these just – really kind of dark.
They're dark.
Funny left turns, but you just killed everybody with the bullet, but you were first in line. The
right.
bullet usually went through your head and then still had enough velocity to kill another eight, seven,
yeah.
eight. But I said, nobody is doing that. What was the one with the firecracker boy? What was that? Oh, was it the Trading Spouses?
That was Trading Spouses.
Oh, my God. Word. That makes me laugh every time
I watch
I
that
it.
Recently. It's so dark.
There's
drug use in it. There's a gay firecracker boy in it. And because my kids were like, what kind of sketch show were you doing? What were you doing? I'm like, you know, I don't remember a lot of it, but I'm sure some of it's on YouTube. I know Fox took everything else off, and we watched that, and Erica went, stop. What's a firecracker boy in it? And then suddenly I'm doing lines, fake lines of cocaine, and the other wife comes in. I remember the guiding principle. And by the way, different times, right?
So Very
we didn't
times.
Have this political climate. Everybody was bored with the traditional happy late night comedy fair. So we really went for edgy and nebbish and everything else. But, you know,
the guiding principle.
The guiding principle of that show is us in the writer's room.
Yeah.
Like if we could, grizzled comedy writers, make ourselves laugh,
sure.
We could get the writer's room stuff that we were joking about. Imagine if you did that and put that on the air.
I'll never forget bringing Marilyn Rice Cub in to set on a scissor lift.
She did?
Yeah.
Oh, God.
She had to come down from about 14 feet up, which is against union rules, let alone just civility. And then slowly lower herself.
Yes. I just wanted to break all the rules with that show.
It was great. And then clearly Fox was trying to position you and themselves as a place friendly to late night talk shows.
Yeah.
So it became more and more traditional as the years went on.
And,
the strength of the show was that. And nowadays, I believe, at least in some form, whether it was Netflix, Amazon Prime, somewhere there's a place for that kind of hilarious dark stuff.
Because
I look
be.
At that
there
and I went, oh my God, every time you swung the bat, you there's a line shot in a gap. That's going for
well, that's
two.
That's very kind of you.
It's true.
We did have the most viral show on Hulu. We were knocking everybody down. We had the top clips, and we were doing that and self-promoting long before anybody else was.
Well, the heckler whisper. I still use Matt Reedy every time
I can. Oh, yeah, Matt Reedy. That's
every
right.
Every time
He's
I
my
can.
Facebook
if I
friend.
Got something, I use
and
Matt
what's
Reedy.
Going on with Rick Richards?
Rick Richards.
Our sidekick, our drunken sidekick.
Who is newsman.
Newsman. He was a local news guy. Right.
Who just hated every minute of doing
yes,
it. And it showed and it was hilarious.
Instead of having a sidekick like Ed McMahon, let's get an old fired news guy who did the local news and been fired, and let's put him there. And that was – the actor's name was Jeff Witcher, and he played a character named Rick Richards.
Right.
Those notes were the best because
– send him out into Little Armenia.
Well, Fox – yeah, right. Jeez, we'd go out and almost get stabbed or walk on –
We were
on,
in the worst neighborhood in the world
and
at the time.
You remember there were heroin needles on the side?
Oh, my
it
God,
It was the
yeah.
perfect place for comedy. I loved it. And the notes that would come in – would crack. Remember that first year because Fox didn't really know how to note a late night show. They were noting it like a half hour show.
Yeah.
So I remember it clear as day them going, Rick Richards can't die in this episode because what happens next week? And we go, well, he'll be there. He'll be sitting on his stool off to the side. He go, no.
Yeah.
You can't kill a character off. We go, this isn't a scripted show. It's not a drama.
You literally have to go, think of this as an animated late night show.
Those arguments,
so
which
when they kill off Stewie, he's coming back the
That's
following
right.
week.
Yes, like Kenny. We were pulling our hair out, but they were such wonderful times. I have so many great memories
God,
of that.
The flying squirrel and the
it's still remarkable to me that
Scorsese snap zoom that we
idiot paparazzi, Hollywood douchebags,
idiot paparazzi,
all of that
Hollywood
stuff.
Douchebags was the greatest.
Little Bill O'Reilly,
Hollywood
which eventually
douchebag.
Got us canceled.
I'm
pretty
God.
Certain that that's what it was. Bill O'Reilly put his foot down.
That
and that
was
the end
hilarious,
of it.
Little Bill O'Reilly.
But it was. I'm just so surprised that it ever happened because, why me? Why us do it? And then why all this stuff? It was just one of those great moments where show business goes the wrong way and it works out for us.
The great Joe Furia was problem solved.
Bam, problem solved. Right.
How great was that?
You want to help hunger in Africa? Open a McDonald's. Bam, problem solved. I know. I don't think it would work today with everything that's going on politically, but we had half the
and
Daily
then
Show
what was
writers'
the film
room
there. That we parodied, the Ben Stiller drug film, where you guys were up on the. That was in the pilot, I think. where you were up on.
No, it was called the sketch was called "Let's Do Meth."
Yeah.
Yes. And it was, let's take some audience member questions. That's
right,
how it started.
Right.
Sir, what kind of suit do you wear? Well, I wear the Paul Smith. And he goes, yes, you, sir. And Joe stood up and he goes, hey, you want to do some meth? And I go, sure, why not? And do you have some music? And they play some music and we leave. And then we go on a meth run. And that was the montage. montage of us.
And it was a parody of that Ben Stiller movie where he plays the. It was he plays the sitcom guy. He wound up doing.
Oh, that's right.
It was a parody of that movie that he did. I can't remember the name of it.
Yeah, that's right. You're exactly right. But it got ugly.
Oh,
the jokes
fast.
Got ugly really fast.
I played Hitler in a hallucination scene for you guys.
And then we walk back onto the stage.
Well, that gem's
out
there
now. Well,
that,
and the music ends, and it's... And Joe goes, you want to get more meth? And I go, yeah. And then the music starts again, and we do two or three more minutes where it gets really ugly God. And really dark.
I just remember...
But that's what I mean. I can't show that show to my kids.
No, there's nothing you can do. I just remember getting dressed as Hitler in the dressing room of a off-Broadway shoe store on Sunset.
That's right. Oh, yeah. We were on a shoestring budget. That was a very cheap... show to shoot.
Thinking, well, this should be fun.
We have lived, Jeff Cesario.
We have.
And it's not over yet. You can catch Jeff Cesario on the new podcast here, one of the top 200. Let's put him at number 4 of the 200, Play With Pain, Chet Waterhouse. This is your first season, right? How many shows
have you done? That's right. We started in January. We got about 17 in the can. And it's all brought to you by cheese. At least we're not bacon.
Subscribe to it now. It's hilarious, as is Jeff Cesario. And you can catch up with Jeff on jeffcesario.com. Is that still in business?
Yeah, Jeff said, well, yeah, I got to fish that baby out of the barrel and polish it up.
Are you on any of the
social media? At Real Jeff Cesario.
And Twitter. And you can catch up with me on Instagram and Twitter. I'm not sure about Facebook. I'm getting tired of the Russians. And real quick, before we go, make sure you check out and are listening to my show over the Podcast One app. You can hear exclusive content from me and other hosts only there on the app. Extended interview clips, Q&As, and so much more. The Podcast One app. Download, listen, and love. We'll see you next week on Spike's Car Radio.
Thanks for listening to Spike's Car Radio. Download new episodes every Wednesday on the Podcast One app or subscribe now at Apple Podcasts or PodcastOne.com.
Have you checked out the big podcast with Shaq here at Podcast One? Yeah, we talk basketball, but we're a lot more than just sports.
I met this fabulous lady. She's had to be in her 70s, knew everything about me, knew everything about sports. And the last thing she says, I love your podcast. And
I'm wow.
Like,
oh,
man. But I hate that John Kincaid.
Oh, no.
That's terrible.
Listen free to the big podcast with Shaq exclusively on Apple Podcasts, PodcastOne.com, and the Podcast One app. If you love the show, share it with a friend and leave us a rating and review.